Welcome to our State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, July 22nd. Every Monday at this time, we review the top stories in State Capitol-related news. And we welcome your questions for our guests at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. More often than not, we have our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, who is at the state capitol every day covering what's happening. Join us, and he joins us in the studio. Hi, Sean.
Good morning.
And sometimes there's so much going on, other Wisconsin Public Radio reporters have to lend a hand covering news involving state government, and that was the case last week. Wisconsin Public Radio's reporter, Madison-based reporter Gilman Halstead, also joins us by phone to talk about some of the issues he covered. Good morning, Gil.
Good morning, Joy.
Well, let's start with the story that you had on Friday, Gil. Wisconsin prison guards who voted to leave the state employees union and join another. Why'd they do that?
Well, this has been sort of bubbling for a long time since Act 10 passed, and the state employees union that represents most of the state employees, including the prison guards, lost its bargaining power, and the guards, as well as others, I mean, the entire state employees union lost a lot of members because people stopped paying dues and just were not part of it because they saw that they weren't going to be getting represented as strongly as they were before. But the prison guards decided that if they formed their own union, that they could negotiate directly for wages and working conditions issues with the Secretary of the Department of Corrections, were frustrated with the way the union had, the state employees union had been representing them. Some of the things they raised in terms of why they did it had to do with the amount of dues they were paying and what they were getting. This new union, once it is certified, which it still has to go through, will be cutting the union dues in half from $36 a month to $18. And one of the things that they didn't like was that the state employees union was spending a lot of money on elections. In particular, they spent a lot of money backing Kathleen Falk, who did not even win the primary in the recall election, and they said they're not going to be spending union dues on that kind of money. They're going to be spending it on representing and pushing for wage issues and working condition issues.
Well, does this, Gil, mean that other state workers might do something similar, split off and form their own smaller unions?
It's possible. There have not. I haven't heard any discussions about other locals of the state employee, state employees union that represent different kinds of workers in different agencies. But it certainly is possible. Critics of this, including Marty Beal, who is the director of the state employees union, say that this is basically what Governor Walker and the Republican majority that passed Act 10 wanted to see happen, a kind of divide and conquer. The argument is that as the number of workers being represented by these smaller and smaller unions becomes smaller, they have much less clout. And as a result, unions will play an even smaller role in the process of representing their members.
And let me bring Sean in on this just briefly, Sean, because we heard a story from you in our state news about national unions watching what's going on here.
Yeah, well, I mean, I talked to a national expert who said that this is something that unions everywhere will watch, particularly public employee unions, because in an era when they're mostly on the defensive, where there's more austerity in government and the unions don't have the clout that they once had, they they have to focus on sticking together and finding some way to keep these local bargaining units happy. If they don't, the gentleman I talked to said Wisconsin, what happened in Wisconsin served as a warning shot. Obviously, circumstances are different here than in other states because we had Act 10 enacted a couple years ago, and you know, that was just a sweeping change to the way that Wisconsin has handled collective bargaining for years.
Gil, so what's the next step in this story with the prison guards?
Well, they have to go through a certification process. I believe it's going to be early next year, because that's part of what Act 10 required, is that unions have to take a vote each year to certify that a majority of the employees want to be represented. And they're confident they'll be able to get that. The vote that they won to actually break off at this point was not a complete majority, but it didn't have to be. It had to be a majority of those voting. But that will change. That's the way I understand it. That will they will have to get more people to more prison guards to vote for them to get certified. So that and the other possible event, although there hasn't been an indication yet that it would happen, is that the State Employees Union would challenge this election based on the way it was run or things that went on during the election and try to reverse the result and force the guards to stay within the union. But that right now it doesn't appear that's going to happen soon anyway. The State Employees Union, Marty Beal, has not said one way or the other.
Well, Gil, you also covered that lawsuit against the state's new abortion law that requires doctors who perform abortions to also have admitting privileges at nearby hospitals. What happened in court last week?
Well, in court last week, the state, through the Department of Justice and Planned Parenthood, through three different lawyers, actually, who are challenging this, presented their arguments, and the judge, in some ways, I think I can say, was equally skeptical of both of their claims, although he appeared a little bit more unconvinced by the state's position that this law is constitutional. But he asked both sides to present evidence that to help them make that decision, and the key here is whether or not the law applies to abortion doctors, who perform abortions in clinics, as it does to doctors who perform similarly complex or risky operations. And the Planned Parenthood is arguing that there are plenty of operations that go on in clinics, not in hospitals, where doctors who don't have admitting privileges at hospitals within 30 miles are allowed to operate. They don't have the same kinds of requirements, so they're not being treated equally, that abortion doctors are being singled out in this way. But the judge wanted also to know from Planned Parenthood how difficult it would be to actually get these admitting privileges. The state claims that it's not that difficult. All you have to do is apply, and that therefore the threat that that clinics will have to close because doctors performing abortions in clinics in Milwaukee and Appleton don't have these admitting privileges. The state says if they just go through a simple process, that won't happen. Clinics won't be forced to close, and women won't have to travel farther and farther from northern parts of Wisconsin to get to a clinic where a doctor actually does have those privileges. So we're going to be seeing that evidence in a trial scheduled for November right now.
Yeah. So, but the headline I saw said that the judge continued the injunction
Until the trial.
Until the trial, okay.
Right, and actually he hasn't continued it all the way until the trial at this point. He continued the injunction for 2 weeks.
Right, that's what confused me.
Yeah, it's expected within the next week, basically. he will continue that injunction until the trial that's now been scheduled happens. I can't guarantee that's going to happen, but the indications are that's what we're going to be hearing sometime this week, that he will change what is now a temporary restraining order into a preliminary injunction that will last until the trial actually happens and through his decision on whether the law will stand. I mean, this is a law that is in place in 8 different states. It has been upheld in 2 of them, actually not even challenged, in Utah and Tennessee. It has been blocked in Alabama and Mississippi. It's being challenged in North Dakota. In Arizona, it hasn't been implemented yet. And it is in place in a somewhat different form in Missouri because they allowed for some exceptions where hospitals basically agreed to allow doctors to basically have admitting privileges just for emergency operations. If there's a complication after an abortion, they'll allow that doctor to come in. There's no such provision in Wisconsin's law.
All right. Well, Gil, we'll leave it there for now. I'm sure you'll be following this story as it goes along. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Gilman Halstead, Wisconsin Public Radio's reporter based in Madison. He covered last week's court hearing on the state's new abortion law, and he also covered the story of the state prison guards leaving the state employees union. Well, let's bring in Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, to talk about some other state news from last week and another court-related issue, Sean. A judge a week before last, I think, said that groups of 20 or more protesters or 20 or less protesters, fewer protesters, did not have to get a permit if they wanted to go to the state capitol. And it sounds like the Solidarity Singers are challenging even that expanded ruling.
What happened is that federal judge William Connolly issued an injunction blocking part of the State Department of Administration's rules for assembling in the state capitol. And, the judge said that there's no way that these rules should be in place for groups of 20 and fewer, as you mentioned. Didn't essentially tell the state you ought to enforce them for 20 and above, but left the state that option. And so for the past week, you've had kind of a daily occurrence here. Protesters, the daily noontime solidarity sing-along gathers in the Capitol Rotunda at noon. They have been routinely numbering more than 20. On one particular day, it was easily 3 times that. And so they're on the ground floor of the rotunda. Capitol Police gather on the first floor, and they have a bullhorn. And this was on day 2 last week, they told the crowd that they had an unlawful assembly.
Please move your group outside. You're supposed to be. If you do not move outside, all participants are subject to arrest.
So this keeps happening. And I haven't been there to hear it myself. You could barely hear the bullhorn that day to get a microphone pretty much right up next to it. I think they got a bigger bullhorn. And so I'm not sure what's going on there. The Department of Administration, which is the agency that answers questions on this kind of stuff, really hasn't told us much. I mean, their chief spokesman's been out this past week, so maybe we'll learn more this week. But don't know what the strategy is there. They keep announcing that you're subject to arrest.
But you don't think anybody's been arrested so far?
Not visibly, mm-hmm. No. And I haven't heard about it. Mm-hmm. In the past, what the DOA or the Capitol Police has done, before this court ruling was they would, they know the regulars and they would mail citations to their home. In some places, they have hand-delivered them, taking them to somebody's workplace even. So it's possible that that's what's going on, but just don't know yet. It's for the time being, I would expect them to have the same kind of back and forth.
So the Solidarity Singers think that they should be able to assemble without getting a permit.
Right. And the DOA has said you can come here if you get a permit. Solidarity Singers have said we don't have to. Our First Amendment rights protect us from having to do that. The Wisconsin state constitution protects us from having to do that. And so it goes on.
So presumably, if they follow protocol, the Solidarity Singers will be there again today at noon to sing.
There's at least a small group of Solidarity Singers there every day at noon. Fridays, they usually go outside. But yeah, I expect them to be there, and we'll see what happens.
Well, there's many more stories to cover, so let's move along. All right. Sean Johnson is with us, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine with Sean Johnson talking about all the news that was made at the State Capitol last week, and we'll take a look ahead to see what might happen this week as well. So, Sean, I know you were on that story regarding the armed guards at the Northern Wisconsin mine site. What's the latest with that?
Yeah, and this is something that we reported last week first. An attorney who's been critical of the mining company up there said that by hiring those armed guards raised the prospect that the mining company GTAC had actually committed a felony. And there's this little-known state law that basically talks about – well, first of all, there's the issue that these guards were up there without being licensed. As of last Friday, they still were not listed as being licensed. And so there's this law that says that anyone who hires someone to provide security of people or property not being authorized by the laws of Wisconsin is guilty of a felony. So pose this question to the Iron County District Attorney, Marty Lipsky, about what that means and how he might look at it. He said he was still waiting to hear back from the state's licensing agency before he decided how to proceed.
I have not heard from the department as of this time, so at this point I still consider it under investigation. I'm sure that they will investigate this matter. I'm sure I will receive a report from them. If and when I do, I will have to make a decision clearly.
So he mentioned there I would have to make a decision, and just kind of asked around to get some context on, whether this was because it's a law. Is it likely that he's going to charge or has to charge? And not necessarily. Talked to a legal expert, University of Wisconsin Associate Law Professor Cecilia Klingel. She didn't want to weigh in the particulars of this case, but she said it's up to DAs to decide how to use their limited resources.
DAs have limited resources, and so they are making decisions about how to allocate resources wisely, and so they're going to be asking questions usually about whether the behavior in question is ongoing, whether it poses a risk to public safety, how culpable they believe the individuals involved in the conduct are.
And GTAC had a brief statement. They ran it by the lawyers, said they didn't think they broke any laws.
And, Sean, I know we are running short on time, but GTAC has pulled the armed guards until this licensing issue
right.
can be resolved.
And that phase of the testing that the guards were up there for is over. The next phase, if they move on to it, could be potentially more destructive, bulk sampling. You could be basically blowing up sections of earth to do that type of sampling. So, clearly that could get hot again.
All right. Also, new job numbers came out last week. How are we doing?
These are those monthly reports that tend to be corrected a lot later on. But on the June numbers, state added about 14,000 jobs, unemployment rate down to 6.8%. So that would put us about 18,800 jobs for the year based on these preliminary reports.
Yeah.
Obviously, they have been changed, corrected. These are the same monthly preliminary reports that the Walker administration has been very critical of, for some time now. It's interesting to see them highlighting the monthly reports last week. But they do have a wide margin of error, but this was a good report for the state of Wisconsin in June.
And there was a forecast for the entire year that it was going to be okay?
Yeah, about 31,000 jobs added. Total jobs in 2013. They forecasted about another 40,000 jobs added in 2014, an election year. So that would be a slight uptick in the economy. but it would still put Wisconsin, if you're keeping track of the 250,000 jobs that the governor said he was going to help the state of Wisconsin create, put it way off there, about halfway there.
Speaking of the gubernatorial election in 2014, possible Democratic contenders are saying that they will not run if another candidate runs. Who's the other candidate?
Mary Burke is the other candidate, and she has really a couple of things going for her. One is that she'd be able to potentially self-finance a campaign. She's a former Trek executive, and believed to be able to pour some serious resources into a campaign. And so just pose this to a few questions here. A couple of the candidates that, that weighed in. Kathleen Vinehout, Democratic senator from Alma, said that if Mary Burke got in, that she would have to think about whether she wanted to get in the race.
I think that it would be a very difficult time to have a Democratic primary. There was a lot of pushback in the primary in the last race, in the recall race. So I think that if she got in the race, I'd definitely have to reconsider my exploration.
All right. And then real quick, this Malin Mitchell, former lieutenant governor candidate, current state firefighter union chief.
My personal opinion is I don't think we need a heavily contested primary. The Democratic side, because I think that takes away from the true goal, and that is getting rid of unseating Governor Scott Walker.
Yeah, and not every candidate is going to feel that way. Winnebago County Executive Mark Harris said over the weekend to WISN-TV he thinks that a primary would be good for the party. He's going to announce by Labor Day whether he's getting in the race.
All right, well, we'll keep following that. Thanks very much, Sean.
Thanks.
Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. Stay tuned. We will talk about cell phone tower sighting after this news.